and please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Jillian from Miracle Group in Bristol.
Hi, my name is Jillian, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jillian.
My sobriety date is August 29th, 2017. I do have a home group. It is Miracle Group in Bristol, PA. It is on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. It is, our format is a 10-minute speaker followed by a 10-minute break and then a 45-minute speaker. I'm really nervous. So I'm going to try not to talk really fast. I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. And I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring women. I want to congratulate Tony on his anniversary. I don't know about you, but getting any amount of sobriety is a miracle. I want to thank the group for having me. I wasn't really even welcome at my little crappy dive bar, so being asked to be anywhere today is a privilege. It's funny, I just drove from Pittsburgh, which is where I was rescued on the day that, on the direct result of a 12-step and a 12-step call, and I was picked up from basically a flop house and taken to detox, and I took that drive today, and so I had a lot of time to reflect, and it's funny because my ego had all of these like really great things that I was going to say when I got up here, and then of course you get up here and you completely blank on all the things that you're going to say. And I remember the first time I spoke many, many years ago, and of course I don't have that amount of time sober, the many things that I was going to say, and I remember the best advice I ever got was just ask God to speak through you, and you can't be held responsible for anything that comes out of your mouth. So I took a little time in the bathroom before I came up here and hit my knees and asked God to speak through me. So whatever comes out of my mouth, that's on him, not me. You're welcome. So the book directs me to talk about in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I live a really blessed life as a result of the 12 steps. I do my best to practice these principles in all my affairs. I have been taken through the steps as outlined in the big book. I do a semi-annual house cleaning. I am going through the steps right now, and it's really funny how my alcoholism manifests itself in all the areas of my life and how unmanageable my life can be in many, many different aspects of my life, like relationships and food and work. And it's funny when I give these things over to God, like miracles happen, and the things that I like am not willing to give over to God, I struggle with and experience pain until I'm willing to give those things to God, and then really amazing things happen. I grew up in a nuclear family in Westchester. We didn't have a lot, but I will tell you that I wanted for nothing. My parents worked really hard, and I have a little brother. He was supposed to be the screw up. He is not. He's a master chief in the Navy that adopted his wife's son. He's the golden boy. He's a lifer in the Navy. He didn't screw up. I was a really good kid. I am an alcoholic. My family also identifies, somebody in this room really loves this part of my story. My family also identifies me as suffering from a disease called Look at Me. I started dancing ballet, not on a pole, when I was, I feel the need to tell you that, people get confused, when I was very young, I really flourished, I wanted to be a ballerina, and I then wanted to be in every other activity I could possibly be in. I was in chorus, I played the cello, I played the flute, I did the morning announcements in high school. I was on the student council, I was the president of the National Art Honor Society. I was in the dance team. I sang the national anthem at basketball games. I think you're getting the picture here. But I was an overachiever. I needed validation in any possible way that I could get it. I had all the love in the world that I could receive from every member of my family. There's a story about me being 4 years old in the corner sucking my thumb, and my cousin came over to me and said, "Gigi, what's wrong with you? And what's wrong?" And I said, "How come no one's taking my picture?" And I would love to be able to sit here and tell you that the 12 steps in my relationship with God have cured that problem, and I'd be lying. I think it's gotten better. But that continued through a lot of my life. So I was a really good student, and I didn't pick up my first drink until I was, I believe, 16 or 17. My mom's best friend took me, cracked open a bottle of red wine, and I chugged it from red Solo cups. And my mom is a hard drinker. I will not identify her as an alcoholic. I will identify her as a hard drinker. But what I saw in my house, my parents are musicians, were musicians, so there was a lot of fun in my house. And I saw my mom and her friends putting on my dance costumes and dancing around the living room, and they had fun. So my idea of drinking was fun. And so I chugged that red wine thinking, I'm going to have fun. And what happened for me, I was a very late bloomer, and I had braces and frizzy hair and glasses. This isn't frizz. And what happened for me, she got me into a bar. I don't know how it happened, but what happened for me is every time I walked into the bathroom, I transformed into this supermodel, and everything changed. I walked out of that bar, and I was flirting with grown men, and my shoulders were back, and my perception of reality changed. And I got really sick. I puked everywhere. I was super hungover. Didn't tell my parents what happened. I'm sure they figured it out. But I chased that feeling through high school. I was pretty nerdy, and all of a sudden I fit in with the cool kids because I drank like a crazy person, and I'm pretty sure I was just entertainment. But I was from the gate, that girl at the bottom of the steps being drawn on. From the gate, I was that girl doing crazy stuff at parties. And that was really my experience, trying to outdrink the guys. And that was my experience in college as well. I majored in Look at Me in college. I went to Point Park College in Pittsburgh and majored in dance. That's a thing. $20,000 a year. Still have those loans. And I only got through my first year. I hurt myself and stayed that summer to try and get better and met my ex-husband. And he was about 6.5 years older than me, and I thought I was really cool because I was dating a grown-up and who had a job and a house and man, I held him hostage. And it's funny how much my perception of things changed after being taken through the steps. Like, I would have told you that I still don't like him very much, but I would have told you that he was like the worst person alive and he did all these horrible things. And but you know, I know what my part is in our relationship. And my drinking with him was very subdued, because he had grown up friends and I couldn't act like, you know, a complete lunatic. The book talks about like passing into that point of no return. And I don't really know at what point I couldn't control my drinking anymore. I just know when I was there. I got pregnant when I was 20. And we had broken up, and I had moved back to Exton, actually, where my mom was living. And she didn't really want me living with her, so she packed me up and sent me back to live with him, and that was resentment number one. And that hung on there for a really long time. And I moved back in with him and played happy housewife and baked cakes and got real fat. And we got married because that's what you're supposed to do, and I got pregnant again. And when my daughter was 6 months old and my son was 2.5, I left, and he had the kids on the weekends and I had them during the week, and I tried to reclaim like 20 and 21 and 22. And I would love to sit up here and tell you that I was a really great mom, and the truth is I love my kids, and I love them with all my heart. Like, they're a part of my heart that is outside of my body walking around. But the truth is it was more important for me to drink on the weekends, and the weekends got longer until he asked me for custody, and I didn't have two legs to stand on. And I signed over custody of my kids, and it wasn't until I went to rehab for the first time and tried to get my kids back that I realized that I had signed over custody. I thought I still had joint custody. And that was the delusion that I was living in. And when he got custody of my children, that was my ticket to ride, and I rode on self-pity and self-hate and hating him and that resentment against him and that resentment against my mother for a really long time. And then I had a friend that told me I was a sloppy drunk and a whore, and she didn't want to be my friend anymore. So I went to my first AA meeting, and that was in 2006. And I mean, do the math, here we are. I'm a chronic relapser. And I went into that meeting, and I saw a girl with like a really long fur coat and furry boots, and I heard you were supposed to get a sponsor, so I picked her, and she handed me a big book, and we talked about her boyfriend. I think we met like twice, talked about her boyfriend, and I never went back to AA, but I did stop drinking. And I didn't drink for a whole year, and at the end of that year, I tried to kill myself, because you'd removed my solution. And my family brought me back to, walked me back from Pittsburgh to Westchester, and I picked up again. And that summer, I did all the things that I never said I would do. And at the end of that summer, I went into rehab for the first time, and I walked into rehab, and I picked out all the differences. Like, I'm not like you. I'm not like you. I haven't done the things you've done. What's crack? What's heroin? I'm not like you people. I'm from Westchester. I'm smart. My hair's done. And I'm not like you. And then I moved up to a little land called Levittown. And went to a recovery house because I didn't want to abide by the rules of my aunt's house. And I just wanted my kids back because I was in any sort of position to be a mother to my children. And I remember I met this little girl. She was 20. And she had about 3 months sober. And she was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. And she opened that book, and it was like hearing Charlie Brown's Teacher. It was like, wah, 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 wah. But she was so on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, she was so excited. I'm like, why are you so happy? I want to kill myself. Like, I just want my kids back. And she just kept telling me that I was going to die if I kept drinking. And I'm like, great, I'm going to die. Like, that's all I heard. I'm going to die. And I didn't hear anything else. I didn't hear any kind of solution. I just heard, I'm going to die. But what I did hear was that there was a solution to my problem in that book. And I remember I went to a meeting, and there was a meeting at Truman High School, and there was this guy, Crispy, that that was leading this meeting, and he was talking about the third step. And I gave this guy a run for his money. If any of you know Crispy, I gave this guy a run for his money. And he was talking about the third step, and I am a really, like, literal person. It's a problem. I think it's why it took me so long to get sober. And he was talking about the third step, and I'm like, so you actually take, like, a physical step? I gave him a really hard time. But the seed was planted. Like, the seed was planted, and I think it was 2 weeks before I drank again. And it was 2 weeks before I drank again. And the next 6 months, I experienced homelessness for the first time. And I experienced my dad sitting across from me in a rehab, telling me that he would have to consider me dead if I ever picked up again. And my entire family to turn their back on me. And my father's my best friend. He's my best friend in my whole, in the whole world. And I'll never forget that. And the problem is that, like, frothy emotional appeal will not keep me sober. And it didn't. I picked up again. And I was living in my car until I gave my car away. And I remember I was standing outside of the Oxford Valley Mall. And I called my Auntie Mick, and really tried to say that my car had been stolen. But when you give somebody your keys and your cell phone, and you call the cops to tell them your car's been stolen, but they have the keys, they don't believe you. And I called her, and I said, Auntie Mick, I screwed up again. And she said, Jillian, I love you more than you'll ever understand, but you're going to have to get yourself out of this one. And I walked out of that mall, and for the first time, I looked up at this guy, and I said, Dear God, please help me. And I only had my purse, and in my purse there was a toothbrush, and there was a number to a recovery house, and I called that recovery house. And a few months before, I had met a woman in a meeting, and she had a furry coat on too. And there's something about that furry coat, man. She had spoken in a meeting, and she had a really gnarly attitude, and there was something about her and something about the way she spoke, and I would ask her to be my sponsor, and she would start taking me through the book, and she and her boyfriend had a house, and in that house there were, like, people sleeping on the couch, and they were taking people through the work, and I was really desperate. I was really desperate, and it was the first time that I would do an honest four step. It was the first time I would do a four step ever, and this woman's still my friend today, and so I started going through the work, and the problem is I met a guy, and he was really handsome, and I was 11 days sober, and. Imagining that, he had 7 months, and he lived in a recovery house, and I decided to go to another fellowship, still based in the Big Book, but the sponsor told me to pick a fellowship, and I picked the guy, because the guy was in the other fellowship, and I would go through the rest of the work, and I would start sponsoring other women, and I would experience some gifts of sobriety. I would start to, I got a job, I got a really great job, and I would do my best to keep him sober, and he would relapse, and he would go to jail, and, I would make him my higher power, for the next close to 2 years. And, at the end of those 2 years, I remember I was, what I will tell you is that I loved this man very much. We were a really gross couple, in the good way, I guess. But it was really codependent. It was really toxic. And I did start to go to court for my kids. I did get visitation with my children. I did start to get some unsupervised visitation with my children and travel back and forth from Pittsburgh. At the end of those 2 years, I woke up one day and said I wanted a drink, and I looked at this guy who had absolutely no defense against the first one, and we ended up at a bar. And I remember right before I got out of that, right before I got out of the car, I looked at him and I thought to myself, this could be the end of us. And 9 days later, I got sober, and he did not. And 100 days later, he died. And what happened in those 100 days was I did everything I could to keep him sober. And then about 2 months later, I met a woman at a meeting. There used to be a meeting at the Hot Potato in Fishtown. And this woman was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and She took me through the work quickly, and thank God she took me through the work quickly, and I got in the Center of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started helping women really quickly. And I was 100 days sober when I was visiting my children, and he called me to say goodbye. And he was about to take his own life. And what I will tell you is I've seen a lot of people die in AA, and I got to experience his death, and it wasn't about me, and it was a really beautiful experience, and he was somebody who struggled to stay sober for a really long time, and I got to let him go. And I used to tell people that that was my spiritual awakening, and I think I thought for a long time that that would keep me sober, and it didn't. And about 9 months later, I decided that I was going to move back to Pittsburgh to be a mother to my children. And I was given a lot of pushes to do that. And I still don't know to this day whether that was the right move or not the right move. But it happened, and I did it. And I got to spend a lot of time with my kids that I don't know that I ever would have been able to. And I got to repair a relationship with my ex-husband and his wife. What happened when I moved there was I did not take care of the three parts of the triangle. I went to meetings. But I did not start sponsoring women. I did not find a home group, and I drank, and I continued to relapse over and over again. And I started to lose my mind, if we're being honest. And I remember when I made the conscious decision. It wasn't a conscious decision. That's absolutely absurd. I can't believe I just said that. I remember talking to my dad, and I said, you know I can go back to AA. I can go back to AA if I need it, Dad. And I think I believed that for a minute. And things got worse and worse. And I didn't make it back to AA for 4.5 years. And things got worse and worse. And I think on the outside they looked okay for a while, but I started dying on the inside immediately. I lost my home almost immediately, and justified the way I was living for a long time. I blamed it on other people, blamed it on circumstance, and I had a couple health things happen, and moved out to California, and my dad took care of me again, you know, a grown woman, and my father's taking care of me. And my dad's marriage actually completely dissolved because of me. And like, I will never be able to fully amend that with my father. And I remember drinking in the car in the parking lot to hide it from my father, like, so that he didn't know just how bad it was. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to go out and sit in the car and drink. And, like, I would talk to people from home, talk to people from back here. And, like, people would be questioning my sanity. Like, I don't think you're okay, Jillian. Like, I think you need help. And I'm like, no, I'm all right. Like, this is all right. And, like, I remember wanting to come back, but I didn't know how. And I thought of all the times that, like, I had gone on 12-step calls, like, offering people help. You know, like, come on, just come back. Like, we can help you, and how people just couldn't accept the help, right? And I was one of those people. Like, I couldn't even ask for help. Like, I was friends with hundreds of people from Alcoholics Anonymous on Facebook. Hundreds. But I could not ask for help. Like, I was friends with people from that worked at treatment facilities that I could have gotten a scholarship in a minute. All I had to do was ask for help, and I could not do it. Like, I started to really understand. And I moved back to Pittsburgh in January of 2017. And starting to, like, okay, I'll just manage this way, and I'll manage that way. And I got a job as an assistant, and I'm a hairstylist, and I got a job as an assistant in a hair salon. And I was living on someone's couch. And, like, this is temporary, and I upgraded to an abando, and, but I told my dad I was renting a room, and, there was, sheets on the walls, and, the windows were broken, and, there were holes in the floor, and I didn't know the guys in the other rooms, and, the lock didn't work on the door, and, I was barely making it to work. I would only go to work when I knew I needed money for my next drink. And I was lying to my dad about everything. And, like, just thinking about that now, like, it makes me sick to my stomach that I lied to my dad, because I tell my dad everything, like, probably too much. And I remember in June, my friend Linda said she was going to come see me for my birthday, and I thought to myself, like, my first thought was not, like, I'm going to see my friend Linda, who I haven't seen in 2 years. My first thought was, like, how am I going to drink when she's here? And I remember she came, and, like, she came to this room I was living in, and I tried to laugh it off. Like, I tried to joke, like, oh, how the mighty have fallen. Like... And the last time she came to visit me, like, I had a 3-bedroom house, you know, the front yard and a backyard and porch and furniture. And she begged me to come home. She said, please come home. Like, I'm scared. I'm scared something's going to happen to you. And, like, she had no idea. She had no idea the depths to which I was going to drink. She had no idea the people I was surrounding myself with. She had no idea what I was doing. And, but she, her reaction scared me a little. And a month later, I got a text message from a woman who had been my sponsor. And she said, hey, I'm going to be in town tomorrow night. Do you want to have dinner? And it was the night before Darren, my boyfriend who had died, had done what he had done. And the anniversary of it. And she had actually been one of the people that had shown up at the scene the night he did it. And the timing, it was not lost on me. And I said, do you know what tomorrow is? And I told her, and she goes, well, that's weird. And so we had dinner, and she asked me if I was happy. I'm like, this is a woman who had heard my fifth step. Like, she knew every deep, dark secret I ever had. And I couldn't lie to her, but I don't remember what I said. I'm sure it was some attempt at a lie. And a song started to play, and it was a song that Darren had played for me. And I said, oh, my God, like, listen to the words. And the last line of the words were, hold me till I die, meet you on the other side. And I had been in the operating room when he was taken off of life support. Like, I was there when he died. And I started to cry. And she said, what do you think he's trying to say to you? And I said, oh, I have no idea. And, but I knew what he was trying to say. He was trying to say, you're going to die, stupid. Like, here's help. This was someone that worked at a treatment center sitting across from me. Like, all I had to do was say, I need help. That's all I needed to say. I need help. And I couldn't do it. And, 15 days later, she showed up on my doorstep. And, 15 brutal days later, she showed up on my doorstep and, took me to treatment. And I truly don't believe that I would be here had that not happened. I did not have the ability to ask for help. I truly understand now what powerlessness is. She took me to detox, and you know, this time I never really thought I was an alcoholic before. I thought I could just manage better. But this time I was drinking in the morning. This time I was drinking all night long. This time I was driving drunk to work. This time I was drinking at work. This time I was drinking for days on end. This time I was waking up shaking. This time I hallucinated in detox. I had never experienced any of those things. This time I truly understood what the phenomenon of craving was. And then once I started, I could not stop. And then once I stopped, I didn't know how long I was going to stay stopped. I went into sober living, and thank God for sober living for me, but living with other women was really difficult, especially in their 20s. I'm not in my 20s, but it taught me a lot about love and tolerance and acceptance. And but I started to go through, that woman started to take me through my steps quickly, and my first year was brutal, like absolutely brutal. I was not really able to see the truth about myself at all. And I beat my head against the ground a lot. And I ran to food, and I ran to men, and I ran to jobs and multiple jobs. I lost 4 jobs my first year sober, and I thought I wanted to work in treatment. Thank God that didn't work out. I had no idea who I was, what I wanted to do, did not trust God at all. Grace kept me sober, just grace alone, and the women in my life. 100% the women in my life just telling me how much of an idiot I was, and like what I needed to do. And I feel like I describe the women in my life as like trees that surround me, like these big sturdy trees that stand around me. And when my ex-husband found out that I relapsed, I had relapsed the whole time, but when my ex-husband found out that I was not sober, he didn't take it well. And I had developed this relationship with his wife, and we had become best friends after I had moved back to Pittsburgh, and they had a baby, and I was actually in the delivery room. Like, we could really mend our relationship. And he kind of got over the fact that I relapsed, and I spent holidays with them. And I kept showing up, like I showed up for holidays, and I kept visiting, and I was working in a salon. I got another job in a salon, and at about 9 months sober, and started to rebuild my clientele, and I was making nickels, I sent what I could to them, and I had not made amends to them, because time, there needed to be time. Like, all my ex-husband ever asked me for was consistency. And that's something that I had never given him, was consistency. He just wanted me to show up. He wanted me to be there for the kids. And all I had ever done was be in and out of my children's lives. And, a little over a year sober, I was working at a treatment center, and I was also working in a salon. I was working 60 plus hours a week, completely unmanageable, and I made amends to my ex-husband. And it was really a beautiful experience, and I couldn't really have asked for a better experience. He told me that I made him a better man, which if you knew my ex-husband, you wouldn't believe those words came out of his mouth. But and he thanked me for the money that I was sending, which I owe my ex-husband more money than I will send him money until the day he dies, because it's owed. It's overdue. And at about this point, I was pretty sponsorless, which I don't recommend at all. And I decided that I should make amends to my children. And I decided that I should make amends to my kids on Christmas Day. So, without the guidance of a sponsor, and completely filled with fear, I made amends to my children on Christmas Day. My kids are 16 and 18. I told my children who their mother really was and where I had been their whole life. And I made amends for never being the mother that they deserved. And I held my daughter for the first time in a really long time. And I asked them if there was anything that they wanted to say. And they said nothing. And I was staying at my ex-husband's house. And I went downstairs. And I sat on the couch. And I looked at his wife, who was my best friend. She asked me how it went. And I told her. And my ex-husband came up the steps. He said, "I love you. It's been a good run. Get the F out of my house. Never want to see you again." And I said goodbye to my children, and I have not seen them since. I went about that very wrong. What I will tell you is that if I died tomorrow, my children know the truth. Unfortunately, I have to be a woman in AA that stands at a podium and tells you she didn't get her children back. And I'm okay. It is not promised anywhere in the big book. We got our kids back. I hit a spiritual bottom after that. And very quickly got a new sponsor, and very quickly started to go through the book, and very quickly started to try and learn what it meant for God to be everything or nothing. It's not something that happened quickly, and it's not something that I implement every day. I'd be lying if I said I did. I do implement it in a lot of areas of my life. In a lot of areas, I don't. What I will tell you is magic started to happen in my life. I was working two jobs. I was working for another sober member of AA, which was really cool. I started to do a lot of service work, which is something that I had never really, really done before. I had to serve on some really amazing committees and be a part of things that I had never been a part of before. I got a job at a really great salon, coincidentally, by accident, for a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was just by mere chance. And I really believe that this woman was like a sister from another lifetime. One of my dreams has been, to be an educator for a color company, and, I told her that upon hire, and on my way here, I called one of the women that I rely on. She's actually another woman that does not have contact with her kids. And I remember the first time I talked to her, we both almost instantly started to cry. I never realized how badly I needed a relationship with another woman that understood. And I said to her, I still had the second job, and I said to her, so I'm just waiting until, like, I can completely rely on the hair business, like, quit the second job. And she goes, well, that's really trusting God. I said, touche. And I quit the second job a week later. And I was absolutely terrified for about 2 months. And didn't know how I was going to feed myself, but I kept leaning into God. And on month three, I hit the goals that had been like the absolute goal that I set for myself and had to raise the bar on what goals I had been setting for myself. And on month four, I went to a bonfire in South Jersey and saw a guy that I followed on Instagram that was doing the job that I wanted, that was doing the educator job. And wouldn't you know, he was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just about hair geeked out on him. And I went, oh my God. I said, you're blue. And he goes, yeah. I went, you're a well master colorist. And he goes, yeah. I said, I follow you on Instagram. And he goes, yeah. And he's got a plate full of food and he's at an AA meeting. And I went, oh, sorry. So I walked up to him and we had coffee. And wouldn't you know, he hooked me up with the recruiter and, my application is in my outbox as we speak, and I'm just waiting for the recommendation of my boss, who is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's just pretty unbelievable. And it's really unbelievable. And I got to tell you, I was at work on Saturday, and I was telling my boss about, you know, I got the application, I just got to fill it out. And, of course, I filled it out really quickly because I'm totally alcoholic and totally an overachiever, and filled it out about a half an hour. And I just started crying, just absolutely started crying. Like, I was so broken when I walked through these doors. I was so broken. Like, my curls wouldn't even curl. Like, they wouldn't even curl. My hair wouldn't even curl. And the amount of gratitude I have on any given day is absolutely overwhelming. My life has been transformed. All I wanted was to not want to drink. Next goal, I want to just not live in a recovery house. Just a sober house. I just want to live in a sober house. That's all I want. I just want to not have to ask my dad for money. That's what I want. I just want to pay a bill on time. That's all I want. And then I remember the day when I gave myself permission to have a dream. Like, I lived in an abando with holes in the floor. It didn't have heat or air condition, with sheets on the walls. That was my life. I was shampooing for another hairdresser. That was the life that I had accepted. Accept spiritual help or blot it all out. Alcoholic death. And I remember the day that I said, alcoholic death. I had accepted it. Spiritual help? Mm-mm. Alcoholic death. I had accepted it. I gotta tell you, I would not be here if not for the women in my life. There are phones that ring endlessly. And there are ears that are beat off, on a regular basis. And there are women that hold me accountable. And, I tell them the truth, because I have to. Those are my 10 steps. that I do often because I can't hold myself accountable. I don't tell myself the truth. I can't tell myself the truth. I don't have the ability to. My head lies to me often and always. I send my 11 steps at night to my sponsor, not as often, if I'm being honest, not as often as I should, and I feel the repercussions of that if I don't. And 12-step work with other women is the highlight of my life. And I should say I always leave the beginning of that off, and I hate when people do that. I have had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Working with other women is the highlight of my life. What I've also been taught in really brutal words from my sponsor and some other women is I cannot transmit something that I do not have. So I have to continue to work on my spiritual condition if I want to have something to give away, because it is a privilege and an honor to give away what was given to me. It is, I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you again for having me. Thank you.
Okay, the group would like to thank Jillian for sharing her experience with us.